Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about faith, family, freedom, the state of Illinois, our nation, and conservative action. Here's David Smith and Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. I'm Monty Larrick. The Illinois General Assembly has adjourned after passing a budget that does not really address $7 billion in unpaid bills and ignores the state's $129 billion pension tab. But on a positive note, lawmakers passed a $5,000 tax credit for families who adopt a child. But wait, how do these lawmakers define family? And with taxpayer-funded elective abortions now the law in Illinois, just how many children will there be out there to adopt? Oh, and guess what? The budget includes some $200 million in unexpected revenues generated through enactment of President Trump's tax reform plan. You know, that tax reform plan that Democrats oppose. And keep in mind, Governor Rauner has a penchant for not mentioning the president by name. Now that I've gotten that off my back, let's introduce a couple of fellows who know how things get done or don't get done in Springfield. They are Ralph Rivera.
Hi, Monty.
A longtime lobbyist for Illinois Family Institute, and Mark Johnson, a contract lobbyist for IFI.
Good morning, Monty.
Good morning. There were a couple of measures that IFI fought hard against. We'll get to those. But lawmakers seem to have spent most of the session on budget matters. They did so, I would assume, with an eye on the November election. Was that the reason for all the peace and harmony in Springfield? Mark?
Well, Monty, I think that when you see how Governor Rauner's responded and those have rallied around him with signing the budget so quickly, that they definitely have an eye towards trying to make things look as normal as possible. I think last year was quite a roller coaster. I think a lot of the legislators were doing everything that they could to get out of Springfield as quickly as they could so that they could get ready to start campaigning in the fall.
They want to be in campaign mode now.
Correct, okay. Absolutely.
Ralph, are they going to raise our taxes after the election?
No, I don't know that. They already took a big tax increase last year. And so I haven't heard anything about raising taxes for next year.
But it's not out of the realm of possibility in Illinois.
That's right.
They have a tendency to do things after the election.
That's right. You get a tax increase or fees, or they'll wait till the next governor is in, then look at that.
Well, the House did pass a resolution in support of a progressive income tax plan. Proponents, in their ever-so-crafty way, are calling it the fair tax. Is that going anywhere beyond a resolution, Mark? J.B. Pritzker, the Democrats' candidate for governor, supports it.
As far as I can see, the Democrats in Springfield know that they have to have more access to more funds, the ability to raise money to address the budget problems. And given that a progressive tax can be tinkered with ad nauseum in the future, I would see that they will push full court to try to get a progressive income tax if J.B. Pritzker is elected.
Ralph, when you hear progressive income tax, fair tax, it sounds like an okay thing. If you're not making a lot of money, people who make lots of money will be taxed more. But actually, it taxes more people, right?
Well, that's the concern. They also believe that if you tax the wealthy, they'll just leave the state. That's certainly the argument from the other side. They say these people have the wherewithal to move their businesses or just go out of state where they're not paying income tax in Illinois.
And we've got an abundance of people leaving the state. Mm-hmm. So, Mark, yeah. Maybe this is not the way to go.
No, once you start having a progressive income tax in the economic environment that we have now, I come from a small business background, you're going to have people jumping ship, and it's just going to end up being very damaging in the long term.
Why aren't they learning a lesson about, you know, what lower taxes mean when they see that the Trump tax plan, tax reform plan that cut taxes, has brought in $200 million in unexpected revenue. You would think they'd say, maybe he's on to something, and maybe we ought to look at that example.
You know, it's a worldview difference, isn't it? It's people look at taxes one way and others look at it the other way. It's hard to explain the mindset.
Well, other than the adoption tax credit, did any other pro-life legislation gain any traction? I'm not aware of anything passing, but, you know, did we make any inroads there?
It doesn't seem that that's the case, Bonnie. I know that Ralph is more versed in that, but, you know, it was the absence of anything related to pro-life issues being discussed by even legislators on our side this time around. There was a lot of lack of discussion, for sure.
Lack of discussion.
So, Monty, we have legislators introduce 6, 7, 8 pro-life bills, but none of them were even allowed a hearing. So it's not that we don't introduce good, strong legislation on the pro-life issue. It's that the leadership will not allow us to have our bills even heard in committee. Let's get a hearing. Let's talk about this.
Why is that?
Because this is the Democratic leadership, unfortunately, is a pro-abortion leadership.
Mike Madigan,
John Cullerton, and they do not want, they're just saying, no, we're not going to let this go. We're not going to even let you have a hearing.
That's a sad example of what it's like in Illinois, this big blue state. Well, one bill got nowhere, but it kind of piqued my interest, was this Pregnancy Help Center Referral Act, which would require that women seeking abortions be informed about life-affirming options. Kind of the polar opposite of the legislation that Governor Rauner signed into law that forces pregnancy care centers to give abortion referrals.
Yeah, the current legislation on the books that Governor Rauner signed was, as a lot of the listeners know, was shocking because you're looking at the first time a state governor has taken steps in that direction, and it really shows you the pro-life issue being undermined in the state of Illinois when you have a Republican governor who's willing to do a complete about-face in the essentially getting ready for re-election. I believe that this was a move to pander for votes.
Yeah. Well, Senate Bill 1564 is now being considered in the courts. There are injunctions against this, and the U.S. Supreme Court could be ruling on a similar California law. So that could have some effect on what happens here in Illinois with 1564. But that's legislation that the governor could have vetoed or mandatorily vetoed, and he didn't.
Right. I mean, he's a pro-abortion governor and gladly vetoed that. I mean, signed that bill. Yeah.
One of the aspects of the budget that didn't get done was trying to take away taxpayer funding for abortions in the budget through House Bill 40. And it would have been a good thing had the lawmakers stayed in Springfield a little longer to deal with budget issues.
That's right. So the listeners should understand that House Bill 40, which was the removed all the ban on taxpayer funding of abortions under Medicaid and state employees' group insurance policies, this bill that passed last year was not funded last year. So this budget bill that was just signed into law is the first year that money was put in to pay for House Bill 40's abortions. But you have to do this every year. You have to put in the money for this House Bill 40. House Bill 40 is the program, if you will, but you still have to fund it. So pro-life and pro-family groups urge the legislators not to support adding taxpayer funding of abortions, to say, I don't want to vote for this if you're going to have money for taxpayer funding of abortion. So this is the first effort, but we're going to do it year after year. That's the way we have to do it, to try to get no funding for taxpayer funding of abortions put into the budget.
Mark, will that gain any traction down the road?
Well, I know that we have some pro-life Southern Democrats that Ralph has worked with very effectively. And then as we work to educate the members on how their constituents do not want to see taxpayer funding for abortion, I think it really comes back around to our listeners and leaders across the state making sure that their legislators are fully aware of how much opposition there is to this.
Do we have any idea how much money was put in there for taxpayer-funded abortions? And we're talking elective abortions. Even before House Bill 40, the state taxpayers were funding abortions in cases of rape, incest, health of the mother. So this is elective abortions we're talking about through Medicaid and the state health insurance plans of government workers.
Right. No, we don't know because it was a lump sum. Well, first of all, you had one budget bill. In the past, from time to time, they've had one budget bills, but they've also had maybe six, seven bills. And one of them may have been the Medicaid bill, in which that's where the abortion funding comes in. But this was one large bill, one massive amount for Medicaid. And so it doesn't precisely anywhere say for abortion funding. But since the program's there, that's what's included in that.
And do we have any idea of how many more abortions are being committed in the wake of House Bill 40?
We're sure that there will be, unfortunately, thousands of abortions paid for under state tax dollars, not federal, state tax dollars, this year. And we don't know that number, but if you just take just extrapolate, we're talking, it could be 30,000 abortions.
30,000 additional?
Yes.
So, and then, Mark, we know that women from other states are coming to Illinois for their taxpayer-funded abortions.
Yeah, it's a real shame. I mean, obviously, the way Illinois is situated, it really does make it quite simple to come over from Bettendorf, Iowa, or Gary, Indiana.
And they can just say, well, we intend to move to Illinois.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Correct.
And, oh, come on in for your abortion.
Yeah.
All right. This is Illinois Family Spotlight. We'll continue our conversation with Mark Johnson and Ralph Rivera, who are lobbyists for Illinois Family Institute. We'll do that right after this.
Hello, I'm David Smith, the Executive Director of Illinois Family Institute, a state-based Christian pro-life and pro-family public policy organization. I want to invite you to join us as we seek to be salt and light to a dark and rapidly decaying culture. You can do that in a number of ways. For example, you can join our email list to get timely alerts and great cultural commentaries. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, listen to our podcast, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can attend one or more of the special events and forums we host in different parts of the state. We do all these things to encourage and equip Christians in Illinois. You see, we need you to help us fulfill our mission to boldly bring a biblical perspective to public policy. Our faith requires us to be bold, speak truthfully, and love our neighbors. Join us. Visit IllinoisFamily.org to learn more. Again, that is IllinoisFamily.org.
This is Dan Props with 60 Seconds of Sanity for Upstream-Ideas.com. Everything big city Dem mayors like Rahm Emanuel do is for the kids, they tell us with ersatz earnestness. Rahm, Tiny Dancer, I call him, is quick to take up cause celebs like the Parkland High School Gun Control Brigade in the name of school safety. What Rahm and his leftist colleagues won't do is change school systems run by the adults for the adults, even when some of those adults are child predators. In a blockbuster expose, the Chicago Tribune documented a long-running sex abuse scandal inside the Chicago public schools that should end Tiny Dancer's career, should be international news on par with the coverage given the Catholic Church's scandal, and that should serve as a warning to public school parents across the country. According to the Tribune, since Tiny Dancer was elected in 2011, 430 reports of sexual abuse have been investigated, with credible evidence of misconduct found in 230 of those incidents. Worse yet, the story identified repeated failures to screen out Chicago Public Schools employees with prior arrests related to alleged sexual offenses involving children. A lot of attention is devoted to holding Pauls and their appointees accountable for threats to kids in school that come from the outside. What about the threats they welcome inside and cover for?
This is Illinois Family Spotlight. Monty Larrick here, joined by Ralph Rivera and Mark Johnson, both lobbyists for Illinois Family Institute. And they were lobbying pretty hard for IFI against the Equal Rights Amendment, the pro-abortion Equal Rights Amendment, the Planned Parenthood-backed Equal Rights Amendment. And at one point, Ralph, looked like we had enough votes to stop this. But that didn't happen. It passed.
That's correct. We had five legislators who said they would vote no, and all then ended up voting yes. Now, this bill passed the House, or I'm sorry, this resolution, this constitutional amendment to the U.S. Constitution, it needed 71 votes in the House. That's a 3/5 vote. And it got 72 votes. And five legislators who had told us they would be no's went yes.
Did they lie to you? What happened?
You know what? I'm not sure how you want to say this. They could. Maybe they lied to me, or maybe they changed their mind but had intended to. The point is,
or maybe
we didn't even get a courtesy.
The powers that be changed their minds.
It could be, but you know, in the old days, I've been lobbying a long time. A legislator would tell you that you're doing a roll call, and the legislator would say, "Oh, I'm with you. I'm a no vote on this." And then if they were going to change their vote, they would give you enough time to say, "Ralph, I've changed my mind for whatever reason. I'm now going to be a yes vote." But they would let me know that my roll call was not going to be accurate. I had to change it. It gave me a time, even though I continue to try to find legislators, that I really needed to find someone to replace that one. They don't tell you anymore. They just say, "Oh, I'm a no," and if they want to vote yes, and they won't tell you. So you're sitting there with a roll call that says they do not have the votes, and five of them then went south on us. And again, if just two of those five had stayed with us, they would not have passed this resolution.
And Monty, there were three Republicans that flipped that are retiring. And it's quite puzzling to me as to why someone like Liu Lang would go, who's the deputy majority leader and whip the vote on this, and the
Democrat
and sponsor of the bill. Why a Republican would respond to someone like that and say, "You know, help me out on this." I don't know why that person would say.
Who are the three Republicans?
Ralph maybe knows the
three. There were several that are retiring. You had Bob Pritchard, David Harris, Chad Hayes.
Are they going to get state government jobs?
No, I don't want to comment on that. I just all I know is that these were retiring legislators who could have gone with us. There were several Republicans that at the beginning weren't telling us they were going to be a no. So we knew that. But we had, as I said, four of those five were Republicans who told us they would be no and then went against us without telling us, that they just changed that vote.
It's just puzzling to see Republicans who are retiring, who you would think that the Republicans that might have flipped would have been the ones who were worried about this being an election issue. Liu Lang was very clear. If you don't vote for this, you're anti-woman. He was bashing Republicans and pretty much threatening them that we're going to hang.
Liu Lang, who's in a little trouble now.
Correct. We're going to hang this around your neck is basically what was the undertone of his talks before the House. And it's just very puzzling to see retiring Republicans go the other way on this.
So for your listeners, and we've talked about this before, The ERA, there are ERAs, state ERAs in other states, and two in particular we want to bring attention to and that we brought attention to the legislators. The New Mexico Supreme Court said their state ERA required taxpayer funding of abortion. And that was done in the 90s. And New Mexico has been paying for taxpayer funding of abortions based on their state ERA. And Connecticut, a court there had ruled the same thing. Their state ERA would require taxpayer funding of abortion. So we see this in states that have state ERAs. And so we're not just worried and making it up. We see this evidence, and that was the concern we had. And we gave them numerous pieces of information, and please don't support this. This could affect the unborn and enshrine abortion rights into the Constitution.
Well, we know that Planned Parenthood was down in Springfield lobbying big time for the ERA. So what's that tell you? But, you know, the privacy issues and what have you with the ERA and child support and alimony, it makes you wonder why they would go this route. So what's ahead with the ERA, Mark? The fight's not over.
No, we have one more state that we need to amend right now, and this would then change the United States Constitution, and it would put the amendment into the Constitution, as Ralph was saying, and more likely then our federal legislators who were pro-abortion would then use that to solidify Roe versus Wade and allow for more. Maybe the Hyde Amendment falls, but hopefully, given that over the history of the ERA, since it's been over 40 years that the states have been trying to ratify the ERA, five states, I believe, and Ralph could correct me, but I believe there's been five states who have actually turned around and tried to rescind their vote, which then essentially, if one more state ratifies, it's probably going to end up in the courts.
Doesn't Congress have to extend the deadline for acting on the ERA? Look, I thought the deadline had passed, and doesn't Congress have to act on extending the deadline?
Well, the Congress, back in 1972, when this ERA, this particular resolution, was sent out to the states, the Congress gave a seven-year deadline. Then when they saw that that deadline was going to pass, they added about 3.5 more years to the deadline, and that goes to 1982. Then, when that deadline passed, they thought of introducing a new ERA in the Congress. But at any rate, the deadline should have been passed way back in 1982. But the proponents of this ERA said the Congress made the deadline, they can change the deadline. They can do whatever they want. They said the deadline doesn't mean anything. In fact, if you read the ERA language in Senate Joint Resolution Constitutional Amendment 4, if you look at the whereases, they spend a lot of time in that whereases saying the deadline doesn't matter. So when you have activist judges who don't follow the rule of the Constitution, et cetera, you don't know what's going to happen. That's why we took this so seriously. We didn't say, oh, who cares? The deadline's passed. No, we took it very seriously. And you have to as it deals with the unborn babies.
And with action pending in Congress, this November election, Mark, could be the turning point for the ERA.
Well, exactly, Bonnie. You have an important cycle coming up with, Donald Trump and the voters going and keeping a majority of Republicans in both the House and the Senate. And that's gonna impact, how the ERA and all of those sorts of issues are handled in the future.
Well, let's talk about some other measures that got a lot of attention, but they didn't pass. One was the legalization of this new era, today's high-potency marijuana. A lot of talk about legalization. They held some hearings on it, if you want to call it that. But it didn't pass, so what's next? When will be the big push for the legalization of marijuana?
Oh, it'll come next year, and the sponsors of the recreational marijuana bills said so. They would want to wait until next year. They're assuming J.B. Pritzker's in, who supports recreational marijuana, legalizing marijuana. So they will introduce legislation next year.
Next year. Where's Rauner sound? Where does Governor Rauner stand on this?
He's voiced various things. I think at this present time he says he's not for it or leery of it, but, you know, you just don't know.
Do they have the votes to pass this in January?
Right now, I'm with lack of being able to go around and talk one-on-one, given that that hasn't been our focus, you know, this spring, it'll be very interesting. Obviously, the election and who ends up getting reelected, who comes in new, if there's a J.B. Pritzker wave of new people that he brings in on his coattails. I think the makeup of the legislature after the election is really going to tell the tale on if they have the votes or not. That's why being involved in, you know, your local elections is so important, to make sure that you have the right candidates voicing the right principles.
Well, the other measure that did not advance, passed in the Senate but stalled in the House, was this bill that would require public schools, government schools in Illinois, to teach pro-gay, bisexual, and transgender history. They're not going to give up on this, are they, Ralph?
No, not at all. They had a House bill. They did not call the House bill in the House because they lacked the votes. A Senate bill came over from the Senate, and they did not call that last week before the legislature adjourned, because of lack of votes. But they don't give up, and we won't give up. This is something that they'll continue to do. If they don't get it this year, I'm sure they'll introduce it next year. So the next opportunity for them to consider it would be after the election, when the General Assembly comes in for what they call the fall veto session.
And that's Danger Will Rogers, right?
That's right, because the elections are over. Mm-hmm. And there's a two-week veto session, so that could be considered. So we take everything as, okay, we stopped it last week for the spring session, but it's not over.
And Mark, you think they'll try to tweak this and make it a little bit more palatable, maybe give an opt-out option for parents?
Well, as Ralph and I have had many discussions with the legislators down there, they see this right now as a mandate, given that this would actually be printed in the textbooks. So it's going to be kind of hard to tweak it if their end game here is to have this in the textbooks and a part of the curriculum. And it's very difficult to tweak it for an opt-out. When that's essentially what they're really trying to push for.
Okay. So this could very well happen. What other red flags are out there? You know, they have the mandated abortion referrals. They have taxpayer-funded abortions through all 9 months of pregnancy. What's next on the horizon? What other red flags out there on the life issue in particular?
Right. Well, I'm concerned now that they've gotten the ERA under their belt. They have House Bill 40 under their belt, Senate Bill 1564, which was a bill of a couple of years ago. I can see them looking at parental notice. They're just going to keep taking away any protections for the unborn, the minors, the women. And so parental notice will likely be their target next year.
They'll water down.
They're going to become completely emboldened with each victory that they have. And so it's very important that we do everything that we can to stand against each effort that they put forward.
Euthanasia, assisted suicide?
Yes, we believe that I have seen a draft of Illinois legislation on physician-assisted suicide. I saw it about 3 years ago. We haven't seen it introduced, though. Having a draft doesn't mean you have it introduced. But we see that day coming by advocates of the physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia.
You know, Mark, I don't think we're far away from the state saying we must mandate abortions for certain cases, for the good of the public, for as compassionate action and what have you.
Well, when we're not taking care of our most vulnerable in society, and my wife is a nurse and she works in a nursing home, she works with dementia patients and works with the elderly, and you know, we've seen a trend in society where we are not, you know, protecting the elderly, and it seems that there's a bookends kind of philosophy at the beginning of life and at the end of life, and the liberal left just seems to eschew wanting to protect either, and it's a tragedy.
We're going a little over here, my apologies, but we haven't talked about gambling, and every year the legislature seems like, well, let's pass a big gambling bill. But this time they have the blessing of the U.S. Supreme Court because the High Court ruled that sports gambling is A-OK. That troubles me because a kid, for instance, could go on their phone, their tablet, and say, yeah, I'm 21, let's gamble. And that could conceivably be on the horizon. They're talking more casinos, more video gambling machines and what have you, but also sports gambling.
That's correct. Last year and the past few years, it was fantasy sports, which is illegal in the state of Illinois. But now that the Supreme Court has opened this up for sports betting, we will see them draw their attention to this. Now, there was no legislation for this year, but the Supreme Court decision came late. So I could see it coming up maybe in the veto session, or it could come next year. Plus, as you mentioned, they're always trying to work on getting 5 or 6 more casinos in the state, including one for Chicago, and giving slots to the racetracks. The only thing that stopped it so far was greed kind of just implodes it. The bill gets so big, everyone wants something, that it finally just, it. But if they can work that out, it will come up for a vote.
You know, Nita Bedell with Illinois Church Action told me that with the sports gambling, you could conceivably bet on a Little League game. Imagine that. Yeah.
Well, I was listening to sports talk radio. As a Cub fan, I listen to a lot of...
I'll forgive you.
listen to a lot of sports talk radio. And they're saying that with our smart TVs, that they're actually going to allow... They're actually envisioning where people will be able to use their smart televisions connected to the internet to basically bet in-game... Play by play.
Oh my. Well, this will be so good for America, right? All right. Well, listen, Mark, you mentioned that the election will be kind of crucial in stopping some of these bad measures or to advance some good things that we'd like to see happen. But there's this conservative backlash against Governor Rauner for signing these two big pro-abortion bills, sanctuary states, the any gender birth certificate bill. If conservatives sit out the election, this could really hurt down ballot candidates.
Correct. And Monty, probably don't know, but I am one.
Oh, you are.
I is one. I'm an elected county board member in McLean County. And we're right now strategizing on how do we get the local people to understand that local elections matter. Local people that are shaping policy, you know, we're faced with a very strong insurgence of Democrats that are organizing to take over the county board. And that's going to happen in a lot of places around the state if we don't get people to the polls on election day. And depending, setting aside your opinion of Governor Rauner, getting out to the polls and voting for your local candidates is crucial come November.
Ralph, we've said in the past that we need a handful of candidates to really, successful candidates to really make an impact in the legislature. But we've got, more than a dozen Republicans retiring? So where are we now?
Well, that's correct. There are 13 pro-life Republicans who are, those districts were pro-life districts. Those 13 are retiring. We first have to replace all of those with pro-life people, and there are competitive races going on. Additionally, we have some pro-life legislators who are in tight races that we need to keep and work for. And then after that, we have to try to change some pro-abortion seats for pro-life seats. And as we had talked, if we had three or four more House members, we wouldn't be talking about ERA, we wouldn't be talking about House Bill 40, et cetera. So it's crucial. So we have a lot of work to do, and people really have to say, well, I don't like the governor's race, or I don't like this or that. You've got to come out and vote on these lower-level races, because that's what House Bill 40 is about. That's what the ERA was about. The local state representatives, state senators, those are important races to deal with.
You know, I think about this, and I wonder if this was part of Mike Madigan's strategy to let House Bill 40 go through, because he knew the governor would sign it and the conservatives would sit out elections because of this. What do you think, Mark?
He's been around for a very long time, and he's been in control for a very long time, Monty, and I would not put it past him. He seems someone that's been in control that long does a very good job of staying two or three steps ahead of a lot of people.
Well, let me ask you, as we start to wind things down here, what Christians need to be doing this summer to stop the legalization of this high-potency marijuana and this gay history, transgender history public school bill?
They have to talk with their state representatives. So for the legalization of marijuana, they have to talk to their state senator and their state representative. This is a good time, because especially for those who are running for reelection, you want them to make that commitment to their voters beforehand. Secondly, on the LGBT textbook bill, U.S. history bill, that's still alive. And so you want to have those, their constituents call and say, I want you to vote no on an LGBT textbook bill. They understand what that is. You don't have to even give them a number. Just say that, and they'll understand. And that's very important. If they don't hear from our people, then they'll say, well, it's not of interest in my district.
Well, if you don't know who your state lawmaker is, you can come to the Illinois Family Institute for information. Go to illinoisfamily.org, and there on the right side on the homepage is a thing called Officials Finder. You click on that, you'll get some prompts. I can even do it. So, and I'm not tech savvy, folks. So do that. Find out who your lawmaker is. Mark, Ralph, thank you so much for your work in Springfield. And let's hope we have some better results next time around.
That's right. Thank you.
Thanks, Bonnie.
All right. And thank you, folks. Please consider a donation to the Illinois Family Institute as we fight for families and life right here in Illinois. Till next time, God bless.
Thank you for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. For more information, please visit us at ifiaction.org. And look for us on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to email us questions or comments, please do so at feedback@ifiaction.org. Until next time, stay engaged and keep your eyes on the prize.